Welcome to Happyful Finding What Works, a podcast navigating mental health and wellbeing support so you can find what works for you. I'm your host, Kat Nichols, writer, content creator, and curious navigator of all things wellness. Sit back, relax, and let's find what works for us. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Happyful Finding What Works. Today, we're going to be talking about food and mood, exploring the link between what we eat and how we feel. And helping me navigate this topic are my two guests, Laura and Bryony, and I'm going to ask them to introduce themselves. So, Laura, coming to you first, can you tell us a bit more about yourself and the work that you do?
Yes, of course. So my name is Laura Bryan. I'm a nutritional therapist and a master mindset coach. And my business is called Mind Nourishing. And basically, I specialize ideally in the link between food and mood. So this is like the perfect podcast for me. This is everything that I love. And I do that through one-on-one clients. And I also do quite a lot of corporate work. So lots of presentations, supporting staff to reduce mental health related issues at work. So that's me.
Thank you. That's great. Yeah, definitely perfect topic for you. And it's great to hear that you do corporate work as well and go in and speak to employees. That must be really nice.
Yeah, it's super fun. And I think it works really well because it means you can like speak to lots of different people at the same time. And I feel like you get quite a lot of impact because sometimes it's people that haven't ever thought about what they're eating and how that impacts their mental health. So I often see a few like light bulb moments when we talk about that things like that in work, which is always exciting.
I can totally imagine that. I think a lot of listeners are probably going to have the same light bulb moments after listening to this episode today as well. Thank you so much. And Bryony, yourself, if you'd like to introduce yourself.
Sure. So my name's Bryony Partridge. I'm a freelance PR and marketing consultant. So I work with different clients, but I particularly love working with people in the arts and culture sector and small businesses. But I love food, most importantly, as well. That's one of my big passion areas. I'm so excited about this conversation, and I think there's a lot to say, and excited to hear what Laura's got to impart with her pearls of wisdom as well, because I've got questions for you, Laura, for sure.
I'll try and be wise, Bryony.
Perfect, thank you so much. Yes, I think that's what I always love doing on this podcast as well, as having somebody with that kind of expert insight who works in this area, and then people with a lived experience, because I think they can be two different things. So it's nice to bring them together. And we're going to start by talking a bit more about that lived experience. So I'd be really interested to hear, Bryony, what your personal relationship with food and mood has been, and maybe where you've noticed that link between the two and how that's kind of impacted your own life.
Yeah, sure. So as I mentioned, I love food. It's something I get excited about. It's something I like talking to people about. It's something I like, you know, researching in terms of recipes and what I'm going to make for myself. Yeah, so I have a very engaged and positive relationship with food, I'd say. And then when it comes to food and mood, I think for me, there's a few really interesting things that I'm aware of. So I know with food that I can get an instant joy and gratification from certain things I eat. And I think that's a really important part of food as a mood lifter. So it might be a cinnamon roll that I have after a morning swim. It might be, you know, the comfort of a roast dinner, like those kind of things. They're the things that I associate initially when it comes to food and mood, because food can have that comfort. It can have that kind of mood enhancing ability. I think what I've also noticed as well, though, is, and perhaps this will, Laura, you'll speak to this a bit more, is the more sustained nutritional benefits of food and how that affects my mood. So, you know, the days that I've eaten a really varied diet with, you know, lots of vegetables, lots of fruit, I've had regular meals that day, I definitely notice that I've got more energy, that I'm, you know, my mood is less likely to dip, you know, in terms of if the meals I'm eating are sustaining me a bit better. And I think that's an important one. But I think one of the most important things for me with food and mood, and I know, Kat, you spoke on a previous episode with Keisha Thomas about this as well, is the joy of connecting with other people over food and how that can enhance your mood. So I wholeheartedly agree with what you were saying and what Keisha was saying in that conversation about just the great connector of food. And as I mentioned, how, you know, cooking for friends and family can really lift my mood, or sharing photos of food. Like, me and my partner do that all the time. It's like, here's what I have for dinner, here's what I had, and just getting excited about that. And I think for me, that is an incredibly important factor of food in relationship to my mood. It's not just what I'm eating, it's the connective ability of food with people in my life as well.
Oh, I really love that. And I so resonate with that enthusiasm for food as well. It's something me and my mum definitely share. It's something we will always ask each other if we've been out somewhere, if we've done something for the day. The first question is always, oh, what did you have to eat? Like, or would you, if you went to a restaurant or if you went out, I was like, oh, what did you have? Like, that is the first thing we'll talk about. And yeah, having that connectivity is really important. And I'll definitely be sure to link that podcast episode in the show notes as well, because I do think there is some crossover there between the joy of eating and how that can lift your mood as well. So thank you so much for sharing. And Laura, coming to you and asking you a bit more about, yeah, your personal relationship with food and mood, and maybe what led you to wanting to work in this area.
Yeah, so unsurprisingly now, like you both, I'm a total foodie. But actually, weirdly, my kind of start with nutrition and being really interested in food actually came from probably quite a negative mental health standpoint. So I remember very early age, I was going to say early teens, but it was probably pre-teens, so about the age of 11 or 12, feeling like I was bombarded with all of these messages around how I should eat, and also being totally insecure in how I looked, that my relationship with food from a young age probably wasn't something that was supporting my mental health. Like, I remember it was all about calories, restriction. And even though I love food now, and I kind of, that's my bread and butter, no pun intended, but like, I absolutely love it. Then it was something that I would worry about going out eating, because I wouldn't know what I was going to be available. And because I was a little bit obsessed, and I thought I knew about nutrition because I knew about calories, and that was all the types of things that I'd learned about through my own like Google searches. I then went to uni, did degree in exercise, nutrition and health, and thankfully then started learning a little bit more about nutrition and how it impacted my energy. And I learned a little bit about how to put healthier meals together. And thankfully then that kind of stress around food subsided. But it wasn't actually until I started working in the area of nutrition that I started to become a bit more interested between food and mood. And I was working in a really deprived community. It was a fantastic job, but it was for a housing association. And my job was to try and get people more active and eating better. But what I was really shocked about with some of these families was how they were hugely impacted by mental health issues. Like, parents couldn't leave the house, so I was trying to organize them to come on a trip with their family, and it was just not going to happen because mental health issues. Or it could be that kids were really anxious or had issues with sadness, and for me, through the conversations that I was having with these families, I became very aware that their diet was very limited in terms of nutrition. Vegetables came on a Sunday lunch, but not really much anywhere else. And I knew in myself, when I was eating a colourful, diverse diet, I felt so much better. And I just had this feeling that I was like, this is one of the reasons why. Like, I just knew that kind of gut instinct, I guess, that there must have been more around the lack of nutrition and this huge impact of mental health. So that's why I went to uni again, did a master's in nutritional therapy and set up my business, because I was like, I know there's something there, I'm going to research it. And thankfully, there was lots of information there about the link between food and mood. So yeah, so that's why I'm so passionate about the work that I do now. And often what I love is that when it comes to food, especially like around mental health, is that we've all admitted here that we love talking about food. And I think sometimes if someone is struggling with their mental health, the last thing they want to speak about really is how sad they are, how depressed they are. But talking about food is often that, like Brian, you were saying, that connection, or it's about that kind of enjoyment. And I think it's a really nice routine to being able to support people if they're not really feeling comfortable about talking about their mental health.
That's a really interesting idea there about, yeah, food being that route in, I think that's such a good point. It can be an easy way to start talking about things, and then you can get into the slightly deeper topics later. Thank you so much for sharing your personal relationship with food as well. As listeners of the podcast will know, I experienced an eating disorder when I was younger, and I do think that is partly why I am so enthusiastic about food now, because I like restricted myself for so long that it's just, I revel in the joy of eating now, and I know how grateful I am for it. And it'd be interesting to hear if any listeners have experienced the same. They've kind of had difficult relationships with food in the past, and they've moved through it, and now they love it, or they want to be able to love it more. So thank you for that. So we're going to move on to the kind of science behind all of this, everything you learned at university, Laura, and all the stuff that you researched into. So can you tell us a bit more about the link between food and mood and what that is and how it all works?
Yeah, totally. This is like the stuff I love talking about, so thank you for asking. So when I started researching more and going through my master's and kind of getting more information about this area, everything seemed to, like, the conversation around gut health kept popping up, and I became more and more interested in that topic. And at the same time, I graduated, God, I think it was about 6 or so years ago. And actually, throughout, since I've graduated, the information that we now know about gut health has grown more and more. Basically, for listeners who maybe haven't heard much about the gut microbiome, what I started learning through this was that there was actually these hundreds of trillions of bacteria that lived all over our body, but specifically within our gut. And I started learning that these bacteria have a real huge influence on how we feel, potentially even our habits, our behaviors, maybe even our personality. And it sparked this interest of like, oh, like, what are the, like, I know these are having so much of an impact on me, like how they are having an impact on my mental well-being. And what we actually know is that these bacteria are really involved with creating a lot of our feel-good neurotransmitters. So for example, 95% of serotonin, our happy hormone, is created in the gut with the help of these incredible bacteria. But other neurotransmitters like dopamine, that feel good feeling, like when we maybe have like a piece of birthday cake or our favorite coffee, and then GABA as well, which is that really lovely calming chill out feeling. So we know that a lot of these hormones are created within the gut by this bacteria. But now we're learning also more and more of the impact that what stays, like what's in the gut doesn't necessarily stay in the gut. And we're learning more about how our gut is actually really chatty, and it chats to our brain all the time through what we know is called the vagus nerve, which is basically like a motorway between our gut and our brain. And scientists have actually found that incredibly, people who live the happiest and longest lives tend to have the healthiest and most diverse gut bacteria. Whereas vice versa, people who often struggle with things like depression tend to have a less diverse gut bacteria. So the thought and thinking is now, and there's loads of research that also supports this, is that yes, there's a variety of different things that can impact mental health, but we actually know that our gut bacteria can play a real pivotal role in how we feel, because the bacteria in our gut is constantly talking to our brain. So if our gut isn't in a good place, and then maybe it's not as healthy as we want it to, those messages are potentially going up being like, something's not right, I'm not happy, something needs to change, which is why we can positively use food as a way of influencing our gut bacteria so that it also influences our mental health as well. So that is one of the key things that I found and was so interested in, especially because sometimes I feel like when people are struggling with things like mental health issues, everything feels very much out of their control. It has to be potentially like what their GP can refer them to, or the groups that they may have to go for support. And I think sometimes there's something nice in the fact that we have to eat multiple times a day, and potentially we have got opportunities every time we eat to support a healthier gut environment so that can positively influence our brain and our mental health as well.
That's so true. And I think something I'm learning the more and more I do these podcasts is the need for a well-rounded approach to mental health, and that it's not just about going to the GP and getting kind of instructions. And as you said, sometimes things can feel a little bit out of your control, but being able to take what you can into control, you know, changing your gut bacteria, you know, doing things like that, making things easier for you to cope with the day to day by changing small things like your meals can be a really big thing. So yeah, it's really interesting. Thank you for sharing. And I had heard of the vagus nerve before, but I must admit I hadn't realized that was actually connected to your gut. So that was really interesting to know.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And we know actually that between the two, so the brain and the gut, we often think it's the brain doing most of the talking, but actually 80% of the messages are from our gut to our brain. So I think that's why a lot of people are calling the gut the second brain, because it is actually influencing so much. And it's exciting that we don't know everything yet about the gut. So we'll be learning more and more as the research comes out.
Yeah, it's amazing. The body is still a slightly undiscovered entity. Yeah. Thank you so much. And Bryony, I wonder if any of that kind of chimed with you in terms of what you find works for you to support your mood when it comes to eating and nutrition.
Yeah. So firstly, on the subject of the gut and the microbiome, I find it fascinating as well. And it was brilliant to hear all of that from Laura, because it's something that I think I read a book a while ago. There was a great book by, was she a German or a Dutch doctor, and it was all about the gut and all about kind of not just the microbiome, but your whole digestive system and the impact it has on your body. And as you say, Laura, your brain and your mood as well. And it was brilliant. I'll have to dig it out. But I had a question as well about that, because I've got an awareness of as you say, eating in a diverse way to help your microbiome. But for me, I sometimes go to, oh, well, that means fermented foods, or that means like certain things, you know, like kimchi or kefir yogurt, or whatever it might be. But my question, and then I will answer your question, Kat, is it just about those kind of foods, or is it broader than that? Like, how else do you support a healthy gut with your diet?
Yeah, so fermented foods are a really good one. So basically what we're doing there is during the fermentation process. So these are foods like sauerkraut, kimchi, drinks like kombucha, kefir. When hundreds, thousands, whoever knows, when they started fermenting these foods to keep them for longer, we know that throughout that process of whether it's adding salts to them or kind of fermenting them in a different way, those foods grow beneficial bacteria like bifidobacteria or lactobacillus, which are the bacteria basically that have the most research, and we know they can really impact our mental well-being. So what happens is when we eat those foods, we also take on that bacteria that's been produced throughout that fermentation process. So it's almost like we're just adding in extras of the good guys to support that real good diversity of our diet. So that's a really good place to start. However, many people, when I mentioned fermented foods, they like scrunch up their face and was like, oh, I'm not putting that pickled cabbage anywhere near my plate. So another way of supporting a real diverse gut bacteria is a little bit what you were saying, Bryony, is about that diversity of your diet. So the days when you eat maybe a colourful diet and you eat the rainbow and you've got whole grains in there, you potentially feel quite good. One of the reasons for that is that when you're eating those foods, you're getting lots of fiber. And we know that fiber is a carbohydrate that when we eat it, we as humans don't really use it. It goes right to our gut bacteria and they use it as their food, which is why often the kind of key thing of supporting our gut bacteria is making sure we get enough fiber, which unfortunately in the UK, we're not very good at. So UK government recommendations are that we eat about 30 grams a day. And on average, we tend to only really eat around 19 grams, which is why often our gut bacteria is hungry. It can't survive as we want it to. So that's probably the first thing I'd say, Bryony. Lots of fruit and veg, whole grains, like your brown breads, your brown rice, nuts, seeds, really high in fiber. And also legumes as well. So that's like beans, chickpeas, lentils. The benefit of those as well is that they're super cheap and also they're high in protein. So they're a really good alternative for people who might eat a vegan or a vegetarian diet. So they're the kind of the basics that I'd say alongside fermented foods if you're feeling brave enough.
Great, thank you. And sorry, Kat, I'll answer your original question as well.
No worries, that was a good question, thank you.
It actually links to what Laura was saying. So in terms of what works for me with food and my mood, so variety is important, not just for me, for the gut health reasons, but also just for, I get bored quite quickly with eating the same thing. So I find that to help my mood, I like to have lots of different things throughout my day. So, you know, I like to mix up my breakfasts a bit, or if I have the same thing for dinner two nights in a row, then I start to get a bit twitchy and I want to try new things. So that's definitely something I'm aware of. And I mentioned breakfast. Like, breakfast for me is one of the, I mean, I know I'm not original in saying this, like it's a very important meal of the day, but I love kind of waking up and thinking about what I'm going to have for breakfast. I make it quite a ritual. I tend to have eggs and crumpet and veggies and stuff for breakfast that, you know, I can take a little bit of time to make, but that, you know, in two ways, that's benefiting my mood. It's having that moment, and I guess that moment of kind of mindfulness and making that in my day, but also, you know, knowing, I suppose, or hoping that it's kind of quite a healthy, good way to start my day. So that's one of the points in my day when I really notice that relationship with food and mood. But also another thing that's important for me is the kind of treats in the day. It links back to what I said at the start of our conversation about those instant moments of joy or gratification. So I try not to deny myself too much, you know, and if I want chocolate, like you, Kat, it's like I love chocolate, so I'll have a bit of that in my day. Or, you know, if I'm out and I want a bit of cake, like those things are just as important for helping my mood throughout the day.
I think that's a really good point, Bryony, because I think sometimes when we're talking about like supporting our mental health through food, people think, right, that's it, I'm going to have to cut everything out. It's all about everything has to be quote unquote perfect. And I always try and encourage and recommend people that actually food can be a huge comfort and support for us. So those experiences that you're mentioning then, Bryony, so when you're having the piece of cake, or whether it's a biscuit with your favorite ever coffee that you love, you're actually, when you eat those foods, you get a release of dopamine, which is that real good feeling, you're feeling nice. So why would we, when we have this incredible resource that actually some food can give us that boost, why deny ourselves? I guess the only thing that I caveat that with is, yes, food can be a huge support that way as well, but we don't really ever want to have to rely on one particular thing. And we don't want food really to be our only support when we need a bit of comfort. Like Kat was saying before about that, like real diversity of support when it comes to mental health. Ideally, alongside that maybe piece of cake when you're feeling a bit sad, other things in the toolbox could be going out for a morning walk, or stroking your dog, or maybe giving your best friend a call. But I just wanted to pipe in then, because I'm totally with you. And that is something that food should be really joyous. And that is something that I think is in a fantastic way to look at it. So keep going with the cake.
I will. And that makes a lot of sense as well, as you're saying, with that holistic approach to our mental health. And I think about it quite a lot because I work from home, so I spend a lot of time by myself. And not to diverge too much, but yeah, I'm always thinking of like, well, have I, almost a bit of a checklist of like, what have I eaten today? Who have I seen today? Have I been for a walk today? Have I drunk enough water today? Have I spoken to, you know, a friend today? And if I'm not feeling great, that's a good sort of checklist in my mind of, you know, what are all the things that I could do that might contribute to shifting that.
Finding the right tools for you is something we're passionate about here at Happyful. On happyful.com, you can connect with mental health and wellness professionals like counselors, coaches, nutritionists, hypnotherapists, and holistic therapists located all over the UK. You can also browse our online articles, self-help tips, and subscribe to our monthly magazine for a regular dose of dopamine on your doorstep. If you're keen to explore what might work for you, whatever that may be, visit happyfour.com today.
Absolutely. It can be so easy to get lost in our day-to-day and to not realise that we have done those things. I know relatively recently I was going through my morning and it was about 10 a.m. and I had a really bad headache and I was starving and I was just feeling really anxious. And I was like, why am I feeling like this? And then I realized I'd completely forgotten to have breakfast. I'd just gotten up and just gotten so into my day. I'd started working. So I was there with a headache, my body screaming at me to say, like, you haven't eaten anything yet today. You probably haven't even drunk any water. Go and do that. And since then, I've made more of a routine of it, as you were saying, Bryony, more of a mindful moment in the morning to take the time to pull that breakfast together and kind of sit and enjoy it. And I think that mindfulness aspect is a really important part of it. So thank you both for sharing those there. And on a similar line there, we're talking about the things that have a positive impact. Do you notice, Bryony, anything that has a negative impact on your mood? I know, for example, for me, having too much caffeine definitely affects my anxiety. And again, skipping meals definitely impacts my mood. So I'd be interested to hear your views on this.
Yes, I'd agree with both of those. I think particularly on the point on caffeine, it's something that personally I've been looking at quite a lot for myself, because I used to start my day with a black coffee before anything else, just on an empty stomach. And that was my ritual. And then I started to notice, exactly as you say, Kat, like my anxiety or my mood would be impacted by that. On a physical side, I was also starting to get like heartburn and kind of negative impacts from that. But I know that I do enjoy that moment of having a coffee every morning. So I've looked at how can I adjust that. So I often will have a decaf and I'll have one and I'll just have one a day, and make sure I've added milk to it. So I might have a latte or a flat white so that it's not as an intense a caffeine hit. So yeah, I agree with you on that. And if I have too much coffee throughout the day, for whatever reason, I definitely notice, you know, higher levels of anxiety, I'm more jittery, and then it's impacts often into the next day as well for me. Another thing, so food, drink, so alcohol is something that I've cut back on a lot recently, because for similar reasons, I was noticing that was impacting, you know, my physical health in a lot of ways, but also my mental health, either the day or the day after. So that's something that I try not to have too much of in my life. And it was interesting around Christmas, actually. I really noticed in the run up to Christmas, the food and drink, like all of us, you know, being indulgent and having fun and having Christmas parties, there was this undercurrent of, oh, but I'm not feeling perhaps as happy, quote unquote, as I should with all this going out and seeing my friends and having a great time. And I think part of it was because I was drinking a lot of booze and eating a lot of lovely food, but it was interesting to see the impact of that almost overindulgence on my mood and eating a lot of food that I wouldn't normally. But I think it's a funny one to balance, because as we were talking about, there's the joy of that connection and celebration with food, but also how that can then tip into being like, oh, well, this is a bit too much, and my body doesn't like, you know, the third roast dinner in a week, which is definitely where I was before Christmas. And I think something else, I was thinking about this, something else that I know didn't work for me when it came to my food and mood. So this was years ago. I tried the 5-2 fasting plan, and I literally tried it for, I think, a couple of weeks. And I remember that being one of the most depressing times in my life when it came to my relationship with food, because those days when you're only allowed, again, quote unquote, 500 calories a day, I was miserable, angry, miserable, just hated it. And, you know, and I think that really stuck in my mind. It's like, I don't want to have a day when, A, I'm denying myself food, but also when I'm feeling like this. And I was so obsessed about food on those days because I couldn't have it. So, you know, for me, that was definitely an example of something that's not worked in the past for me when it comes to food and my own mood and state of mind.
Absolutely. And I think what's so interesting there is that everybody is going to be different with this. So some people are going to eat those three roast meals, roast dinners a week and feel absolutely fine and feel great. And it's going to be great. But for others, it's going to affect them. And I think sharing what you did about alcohol is also a really good point. I think it's in society, I think it's becoming a much more common to be low alcohol or alcohol free. I know I've got some alcohol free spirits in my kitchen that I've been enjoying the last year as a replacement for other things. And I've not really noticed much of a difference apart from an improvement. I feel better with that. So it's really interesting. So thank you so much for sharing. And Laura, I'm going to come to you. We have covered a little bit about the different types of food that can help to improve mood. So maybe if there's any more you want to expand on there, or perhaps anything that could be worth moderating, as we mentioned there.
Yeah, so like we said before, colourful diet, lots of different fibres and things like that is a real good starting point. But if we kind of zoom in a little bit in terms of like how our brain sometimes can create that feeling of happiness. We know that serotonin is often the kind of neurotransmitter that we think about. That's our like quote unquote happy hormone, although there are obviously other hormones that create that sensation. What we know is that the building block to serotonin is actually a protein called tryptophan. What we want to make sure of is that actually throughout our diet, we actually have some of these building blocks that will allow us to create serotonin. So tryptophan-rich foods could be things like seeds, eggs, poultry, like chicken and turkey. I've already said cheese, haven't I? Yeah, so those types of foods. I think green leafy veg have also got some elements of tryptophan potentially, but some of those foods have tryptophan in them. So it's a good idea to make sure if you're looking at your diet that you've got some of those in. But another thing to touch upon, especially because recently, probably not even that recently, but maybe over the last few years, decade, there seems to have been like an increase of hating on carbohydrates, and loads of people are completely cutting out carbs or going on like a really intense keto diet. And actually, when it comes down to the mechanics of serotonin, that can actually play havoc, not only on potentially what Bryony was saying around that obsession with food, and obviously we're cutting away some of that comfort in terms of that dopamine hit when we have carbohydrates, but also we know that we need carbohydrates as a way of transporting that tryptophan to our brain so that it can create serotonin. So I guess if someone's listening to this and they're thinking, right, yeah, I don't feel great, like, and hopefully they're getting support in a variety of different ways, but it could be that they reflect on their diet. If they're someone who's doing a really strict diet and cutting out all of their carbs, then it's probably a good idea to add a few of those back in whatever way feels comfortable. It could be some really lovely sweet potato, it could be brown rice, it literally could be any carbohydrate. There isn't really a good or bad. But I would say that that's another way of supporting your brain. And it's quite an interesting one, really, because we, as human beings, I think we've got this like innate knowledge of potentially what should be on your plate. And I say should in like inverted commas, because it's going to depend on each person. But I think sometimes if you have a plate and it's maybe like a tuna salad, for example, with no carbs whatsoever, I don't know if other people feel this, but I know in my brain, it's almost kind of like there's something missing. Like your brain just doesn't quite get that same satisfaction as if there was a tuna salad, maybe with a few new potatoes, or like you have a piece of bread with it. And I think it's like, whether it's that gut feeling or that kind of innate knowledge that actually we're made to have a balanced diet of different things. And I guess if we zoom into the science, that's one of the reasons why we need carbohydrates to be able to support that tryptophan and transferring into the brain. So yeah, they're the other things that kind of come to mind. There's probably loads of other things, but I think they're hopefully good things for listeners to start on.
Absolutely. And that's really interesting to hear about the role of carbohydrates and what that does and how that actually transports the important stuff that we need to our brain. That's really helpful. And would you say there's anything people may want to moderate or kind of reduce, or is that really just dependent on the individual?
Yeah, I think it's mostly dependent on the individual. I guess probably one of the things that I know with a lot of my clients or people that have come to me who struggle with things maybe like anxiety or low mood, one of the things that ideally we'd want to try and change if we can is if it looks like that person is on a little bit of a blood sugar roller coaster. And what I mean by that is, say, for example, that person ate like a sugary cereal for breakfast and that peaks their blood sugar levels. And then that dips mid-morning because that blood sugar level was absorbed really quickly because it was quick releasing energy. Then mid-morning, they're like, oh, I'm starving. I need a couple of biscuits. And they have that. And then at lunchtime, they get a dip again and they have to have something else sweet, or maybe a bowl of pasta because they really need some energy. And then what happens is they're going up and down in terms of their blood sugar levels every day. And that can actually be really stressful on our body. And some people, when they get that sugar dip, they have a feeling of anxiety, because basically what's happening there is your body is sending a little bit of a warning to your brain and saying, oh, your blood sugar level's low, this could mean that we could die. And like, and it's your brain is over exaggerating everything, because of course its main thing is to keep you alive. So what can be really helpful with people who are in that blood sugar level roller coaster is to just change their diet slightly, maybe slightly reduce the amount of sugar that they're having, but maybe more importantly, look to add in extra protein so that they don't get as many highs and lows as they did before, and they get a bit more of a smooth travel through the day. And people often find that just by little changes of that, they can feel loads better, not only with their kind of instances of anxiety, but also their energy as well throughout the day.
That really reminds me of a video I saw. It was a while ago, but it was somebody talking about if you are like really craving a snack, you're craving like a cookie, like, yes, you could just eat that, absolutely go for it. But if you want to do what you were saying and kind of maybe avoid that super quick sugar rush, she was like, just crumble the cookie on a bowl of yogurt, add some berries, add some nuts. You're still eating the cookie, but you're adding these other bits, which I'm guessing would that help the release slow down?
Yeah, so what you're doing there is obviously the yogurt is high protein. So you're kind of reducing that highs and lows. And also, I really love that principle because as human beings, like as we've all been saying before, we hate feeling restricted. And the fact that if you're just to say, no, I'm not having the cookie, chances are you're going to be thinking about that cookie all day. And you'll probably then have to eat like 4 different rice cakes and like 7 plums, or like, and I'm obviously just picking numbers out of my head, just to try and satisfy your brain. Whereas if you were to just eat that cookie, and yes, maybe add in extra things so that it supported you, hopefully then you can eat it and then move on with your day and not have to constantly be thinking about how hungry or how much you want that cookie. So yeah, I really like that idea. Adding in is much easier than taking away.
Exactly. It's just something I remember seeing that, and I've just always think about that whenever that comes up. So thank you. And I feel like people listening to this are already probably learning a huge amount. I know I am. I wonder if they're thinking about working with a nutrition professional, how can a professional support them? What would that look like to work with someone who is a nutritional professional?
Yeah. So what it will look like is that there wouldn't be just one way that it would look, if that makes sense. So there isn't a perfect diet. There isn't kind of the best way of doing things that will suit everyone. So what people should expect when they come to a nutritional professional is that actually they're going to be asked loads of questions before anything is recommended. They're going to be asked what their food diary is like. They might be asked about genetically what goes on in their family. They might be asked about their whole health history, what medication they're on, what their symptoms are, what their goals are, because the idea and the role of me and other nutritional professionals is to find out exactly what is going on with you, being that detective, finding out where the imbalances may be, or maybe what your routine is maybe helpful and what maybe isn't helpful, and then to create something with you. So I think sometimes people come to me with the idea that I'm going to tell them exactly what to eat, at what time, and these are the recipes, and off you go. And unfortunately, I don't want to do all the work. Like, I want you to actually come on this journey with me. So the idea is, when people work with a nutritional professional, it's that it's a teamwork. It's not one person telling the other what to do. It might be that they share some knowledge, or it could be that they share ideas. But the whole goal really is that you work together to find out what's going to best suit your lifestyle, what foods you like, so that you're more likely to create those sustainable changes. And also at the same time, it probably won't ever just be about the food. It will also be about how stressed you are, because we know with our gut bacteria, for example, if you're in a very stressed state, we know that you tend to have a less diverse gut. In terms of that vagus nerve that we were talking about, if you're really stressed, that basically can't work. You're either in that fight or flight, or that rest and digest. So all of these things we have to think about. We have to think about what your sleep is like, because if you're not sleeping very well, chances are you'll tend to crave more carbohydrates because you want that dopamine and that comfort. So it won't just be about the food. It will be about everything else. And I think sometimes people are quite surprised by that. But actually, when you think about it, it kind of just makes sense, because if you just look at food, you're cutting off a huge amount of benefit, and probably you can get to where you want to be much quicker if you look at the whole lifestyle rather than just what you're eating on your plate every day.
Exactly. And I think that's really helpful for listeners to know that, yeah, that's what they're going to get when they work with a nutrition professional. It's always great to hear professionals say that they're not there to just tell somebody what to do. It's, you know, it's a collaborative effort, and you're going to work together to find what works for the individual, which is really great. Thank you. So to wrap up, I always like to ask if there's anything you would like to share with anyone listening who is maybe struggling with this topic, and maybe their mood is suffering at the moment and they suspect their diet has a role to play. And Bryony, I'm going to come to you first. Is there anything you would say to anyone who's feeling this way at the moment?
Yeah, it's an interesting question, because I suppose I can only speak from my own experience. And I think for me, I'd say you don't have to change everything about your diet. I think it's looking at what you enjoy, and are there small things you can do every day that don't take loads of time and also aren't expensive as well, like something that is going to be manageable for you. I think that's probably an important one. And I guess the second point, thinking about what we've talked about today, is it's just really important to still enjoy what you're eating. So finding that balance between foods that are nutritionally good for you, but having those moments in your day when there's just the joy of eating something that you love, like don't let go of that, because that has a really important role.
Yes, I co-sign that message. I think that is really important, that balance as well was great. Thank you so much. And Laura, yourself, what would you say to anyone who's listening to this and thinking, oh yes, I need to do some work on this?
Yeah, no, I totally agree with everything Bryony was saying, because I think what sometimes we know that the smaller the change you make, actually more realistic that you're going to stick with it. So I often recommend people just start with the teeniest, tiniest thing that they can. Do that and then look at what else they can change. I think it's important that if people are feeling really overwhelmed, like I have clients that come to me that have done all of the research and all of the different Instagram accounts and all of the Google searches, and they have now feel probably more overwhelmed than ever. I guess in those instances, of course, reach out, get support, reach out to a nutritional professional and kind of get what works for you. However, what sometimes people find really helpful is that sometimes just reflecting a little bit on what you're already doing can just be a real light bulb moment. So I sometimes have clients come to me after their 3-day food diary that we do. So they just record everything on 2 work and kind of like weekdays and 1 weekend day. And they'll come to me, and in the first session, they're like, oh my goodness, Laura, I can't believe that was what I'm eating. I know exactly what I need to do. And I'm like, great, okay, well, let's talk about that. Because sometimes when it comes to eating, we have our routines, we have our habits, we have very busy lives, and we actually don't, well, many people don't particularly even think about what they're eating or reflect on it. And it could be like that day cat when you're kind of get to 10 a.m. and you're like, why am I anxious and why am I hungry and like angry at the world? And then you reflected and was like, oh, that's why. Sometimes it might not be as obvious as that. And it could be that writing down what you're eating and reflecting on it, you might be like, oh my goodness, I'm only drinking one cup of water a day. And like, I was wondering why I had such brain fog and like I was struggling to concentrate. So I think that can sometimes just be really helpful. And if you write it down and you're like, right, I'm still confused, then yeah, the next step is that thankfully there's hundreds of thousands of professionals out there who are ready and like excited to kind of go on this journey with you to make some positive changes.
I love that. I think, yeah, reflection, that's such a good point, is to actually take the time to stop and ask yourself what is working for me and what is not working for me and what... yeah, what changes can I make? And as you said, starting small as well is absolutely key. So for any listeners who may be keen to connect with either of you online, I'd love it if you could share your details. So Laura, I'll start with you. Where can people find you online?
Yeah, so my website is mindnourishing.com. And then Instagram, if you just search mind_nourishing, I'm on there too. To be honest, I tend not to spend huge amounts on social media anymore. For my own mental health as well, but I pop in there every once in a while to share pictures of food and any bits of pieces that I pick up, but I'm always there for messages if people have got any questions.
Perfect, thank you. And I will say I've done a few of these recordings now and you're not the first person to say that about social media, so there's definitely a trend I'm seeing. Bryony, how about yourself? If people want to learn more about you and connect, where can they find you?
So my website is www.tellmemore.com. And that's more without an E. So more is the Cornish word for C. And then on Instagram, it's tell_me_more_. Again, more without an E.
Oh, I love that. I'm going to have to, my dad is Cornish. I'm going to have to tell him that.
Amazing.
Cornish language. Yeah, that's lovely. Thank you. So yeah, huge thank you again to both of you for sharing your time with me today and sharing your insights. It's been a really fascinating conversation. And for anyone who is listening and is thinking, yes, I am at that point where I do want to work with a nutrition professional, then you can find more at nutritionist-resource.org.uk. And we're going to be back next week with our Exhale episode, where we're going to be delving into this topic further. But until then, please take care. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please do share it with anyone you think may benefit and rate and review the podcast. This all helps our mission of creating a happier and healthier society. To delve deeper into the topics discussed today and to find professional support that's right for you, visit happyful.com.